So we have been discussing a few sessions, some things about community, about forgiveness, and today I was to address some simple formulas about trust. And so tonight I'll just give some simple reflections and to get your responses in relationship to trust amongst devotees. And tomorrow morning, because of time constraints, we'll look closer at trust, developing greater trust in Guru and in Krishna. So we will go a little deeper in the Bhagavatam class period tomorrow. We mentioned many things about community. What are the things that we're all thinking about and discussing, hopefully in different ways? We looked rather extensively, but briefly, about how forgiveness is such an essential part of the life of a brahmana, such an essential part of being a sadhu, how forgiveness is really something more we do for ourselves, even more than for the person who disappointed us, abused us, assaulted us, or whatever. Forgiveness doesn't mean that what happened was okay. It doesn't mean that what happened should allow it to be happened again. It doesn't mean that we make ourselves or allow ourselves to be doormats. It doesn't mean that the person gets off. But it does mean that we don't keep living in the past, that we're ready to create a more auspicious future, but not letting the past keep jumping out, haunting us, assaulting us again and again as we carry it day after day. And we discuss how lack of forgiving is like having some bricks or hot boulders, bricks in your hand, and you're just holding, waiting so you can attack or assault the person. So in the process, you're burning your own self. How so much chronic disease, accelerations of offenses, apparats, can happen as we are not forgiving, and then it carries over in all of our different relationships. Even sometimes our difficulties in our marriages and difficulties, extended difficulties of our children with us, all caught up in things that we are holding grudges or not releasing. And we went on discussing that. One area we didn't touch upon, which I'll mention when I go into our new subject, is forgiving ourselves. That sometimes we may have trouble forgiving others. We may even forgive others. So that we are not taken away from who we are and what we can be by letting somebody else's maya keep attacking us or while we're carrying it. But sometimes we have trouble forgiving ourselves because we have made many choices and many mistakes. And of course, that's life and that's natural. And it's unfortunate if somebody keeps making the same mistake. But making mistakes is also not an issue that we should become so possessed with that we just lament and worry. See, often worrying is like an excuse not to engage in healthy, constructive activity. Sometimes worry is a way that we justify not being able to do what we can do, because after all, Mom, you want to have a chair? Are you okay?
No.
Okay. Because after all, we're doing something. We're worrying. And of course, as we talked about internal dialogue or internal mantra, that who we are is really more about what we are saying to ourselves repeatedly than what we're saying externally or even sometimes what we're doing. And we understand this because we know the mind is the greatest friend or the greatest enemy. We discuss also in the Darshan how scientifically so-called proven is that people's internal dialogue normally is 80% negative. Of reflecting on so many things that went wrong, what can go wrong. So often we put so much energy into thinking why something won't work, and we don't allow it to manifest because we've already defeated ourselves before we can start. And of course, this all connects with faith and trust, as we'll open up on in a few minutes. So we do want to also, as much or even more, forgive ourselves. We want others also to forgive us because we have done a lot of things, often unconsciously, that the intention was good, but somehow what manifest wasn't so wonderful. So forgiving ourselves, again, has a lot to do with our deeper understanding of karma, deeper understanding of just the fact that we are in the abode of Maya, material world. So we're in somebody's own camp. Their presence is normally dominant, or their influence is dominant. So it's natural that being in a material body and material world brings constant confusion, constant setbacks, constant challenges. And the significant thing is how we avoid, get around, transcend this Jagunya Bhavarjuna, how we rise above. It's natural being in a material world that conflicts are practically always there, because this is the duality, the material nature. But it's also natural that what determines success has so much to do with how we deal with adversity. What determines a healthy community is how it deals with diversity, which shows how much there is real sense of community. What shows a healthy marriage is often how husband and wife, children, etc., able to still be there for each other, help each other, compliment each other, protect each other, love each other, support each other, especially when there is adversity. And when there is adversity, it's really a barometer and a wake-up call for us to look closer at what is going on and what isn't going on, because our weaknesses will shine or show even more. So we want to look much more closer at what conversations we're having on a day-to-day basis. We're holding grudges when we are having low trust, when our faith is weak, we're not forgiving. Then what is constantly going on in our mind is attacking us, assaulting us, is limiting our ability to be more receptive, especially for mercy. Effort is very important, but especially in Kali Yuga, we don't just want justice. Justice means that we get what is due to us. We want mercy. We want to appeal to the Lord's Department of Mercy. We want mercy from Radha and Dharmachandra. We want things to happen in our lives even greater than what our particular resources, our facilities. We want things to happen better in our lives than this what is orthodox. So we're able to forgive ourselves. Just as when we forgive someone else, we shouldn't be in denial about what happened, because then it will happen again. We don't have to forget. In most cases, we shouldn't forget. Because if we forget, then likely some similar kind of inauspicious, or the same inauspicious thing can happen again. But we, of course, remember the past, and we learn from the past while we focus our energies on the present and, most important, in arranging for the future. So as we do so much for ourselves by forgiving others, we do a tremendous lot for ourselves by also forgiving ourselves. And forgiving ourselves doesn't mean that we deny a fault or mistake that was made, but that we accept that we made a mistake, that we had a failure, but that we are not a failure. There's a difference in meditation that produces a different kind of response. When one sees themselves as a failure, then that becomes their identity. That becomes so much their mental culture that then begins to affect their whole being. We're mentioning how from our thoughts comes our speech, our speech, our actions, our habits, our character, our culture. So we want the Vedic culture. We want a culture of bhakti. We want a culture of love. That will trace itself all the way back to the quality and the kind of thoughts that we have. We can talk a lot about so many things, Vanashram Dharma, healthy development, good education, so many things, but if our thoughts are still so much in the old paradigm, then ultimately our actions and our habits is going to produce a certain kind of culture, is going to be against what we really want. So what we're repeatedly telling ourselves, if we understand the power of mantra, it's going to produce something. Maharaj was mentioning today how Krishna consciousness, as Richard wrote it down, and I probably still forgot it, how Krishna consciousness is really about searching for the proper attitude. That having the proper attitude determines our level of transcendence. Our international society for Krishna consciousness, not just conceptualization, but certain in-depth consciousness produces certain kinds of results. Even to the point that if we want things to change in our life, we simply have to change our mental construct. And then our whole karmic arrangements, you know, will change. That's why sometimes people keep having similar experiences, because even though they don't want it, but they keep having the same kind of mental construct, mental reflections. We want to forgive others. We want to forgive ourselves. We want to recognize, wow, I really blew it. But I'm not a failure. I made a big mistake. And now from that mistake, I'm not going to let it define me. I'm not going to also deny that I made a mistake, because then again, I will also make the same kind of mistakes. Both extremes. To be in denial means that you're not going to learn sufficiently from it. And it means likely it can happen again, maybe even worse. But to overly identify with that mistake, then it's similar to someone who you're not forgiving, who is now constantly carrying and letting those kind of things happen daily in your life by not releasing it. So if we don't release also our own mistakes, then we'll begin to think that we are failures and our life will manifest as such. It's one of the reasons also why there's such an increase in depression. Because so many people have accepted that they're a failure. Why there's also an increase in suicide. Many people have accepted that they are a failure, and the only thing that the future is going to produce is more failures. And they're going to consider that they're not worthy of love, or are they able and capable to give love. We mentioned how when somebody commits suicide, one of the aspects of that is that someone is somehow thinking or perceiving that there is so much pain that they're presently having, they're considering that to continue with that same kind of pain for the future is beyond the ability to address, to cope, and to live on. Person's kind of considering that somehow they're perceiving that there is some lack of ability for them to live on, for someone else to give and to share love. It's a very interesting thing based on what the mind has accepted. Even though there can be so much love or so much opportunity for the individual has accepted that there's no one worth me trying to continue living on for in such a way, because everything is such a problematic situation in my life, relationships, and what I'm accepting. And then they accept they're a failure. If you're a failure, then what hope is there if they've already concluded that there's nothing other than but additional failures in the future? So now when we look at trust, it's very similar to looking at Shraddha or faith. We understand that there's three different kinds of devotees. What are those three types? We can analyze devotees in many ways, but three very classical, prominent ways how we categorize, we see devotees. What are those? Yes, but I'm thinking another way based on faith. Based on faith. Yes. 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 Kanishna, Madhyam, Anuttama, Adhika. And they're all highly evaluated by the quality of faith. Now, not blind faith. Blind faith just produces sentimental and blind reactions, and it produces anger and frustration, because blind faith doesn't deliver and it doesn't bring a sense of longevity. But it is very, very hard to be faithful when one has had a complex, difficult, disappointing past. It's very, very difficult to be faithful if one is having a present that is unfulfilling, that is disappointing, that has not been reinforcing, does not offer sufficient solace. Because faith has so much to do with an anticipation of future. We have somewhat a crisis in faith in our institution all around the world, which is choking our devotional creepers, which in some cases is allowing people to rationalize different kinds of sense gratification, which is allowing some people to rationalize worrying rather than engaging in assertive proper activities, which is causing some people to get so preoccupied with the past that they can't do the necessary for the future. But it's understandable, because when we have often tried to repose our time, energy, resources, commitments, and we don't get sufficient reciprocation, or if we are trying to commit and we find that what we're trying to commit to is not so authentic, then it's natural that if you burn your hand on the stove, or you burn your hand in fire, naturally you're going to have fear and you're going to be procrastinating or be inhibited about going over there again. It's natural that a young girl who falls deeply in love and she's giving her entire existence practically just to find out that the person who said also that he's doing similar is big, big cheater, liar, etc. I'm shaking too much. I don't have faith in this chart, huh? If it falls, I really won't have faith. It's closest. Faith has a lot to do with experiences. So if it falls once, I will be very uncertain and feel very precarious that perhaps it will fall again. So our faith definitely gets stronger as we have experiences around us that helps us to be faithful. But often we have the position that there may be many difficulties we've had in the past and even in our present, and we are still called upon by the acharyas to be faithful. And so, yes, it does become difficult because we are social entities. We're all affected by sadhu sangha, the quality of sadhu sangha. For an environment that's massive, msipa japa, it's very hard not to be affected by it. One has to do some extra work. For an environment where people basically are very critical, cynical, an environment where people basically have denied the principles that we've made our vows to, as we take our initiation and people take them lightly, it'll become easy to become influenced by such. One has to work a little harder not to, you know, to become influenced. Anyway, we'll look at some of these kind of topics tomorrow as we try to address very openly and reflectively this crisis in faith, what things that we perhaps can individually do for ourselves, for our families and communities, and to look closer at what is some of the reasons that such has happened so we can be able to look more in the future of how to avoid such, and even how to use whatever challenges and even negativity that's come into our life, so that we turn the negative into positive, and we turn the positive into more positive. If that makes any sense. So now we see that the Uttama has unequivocal, categorical faith in the potency of Shastra, the potency of Sadhu, and the potency of Acharya or Guru. But the Uttama has such faith not because there is just anticipation, not because there is just speculation or conjecture. The Uttama has faith also because the Uttama understands that it ain't just about faith. That proper faith produces realization, results, and experiences. So the Uttama really is not much so much faith when the Uttama is that. It's experiencing that. It's experiencing the fullness of Krishna's nama, his name, the experience of Krishna's rupa form and guna and qualities and lila. It's not really a matter of faith, actually. It's experiences. And we know the Uttama even tunes down from the experiences so the Uttama can be able to associate and relate and to inspire others to come up to the point to experience. In other words, we are not trying to, draw attention to karma conduct that we must do devotion and we must get something. If we don't, something is wrong, or we're trying to give any kind of support to sahajism, where people pretend to have and they don't really have that experience, or they don't have the adhikar. But we are saying, hey, Krishna consciousness ain't about just faith. It ain't just about ritual. It ain't about just sadhana. It's about ultimately doing these things so that we become experiencers of the higher. It ain't even about four rules and regulations. Four rules and regulations are not going to take anybody back to Godhead. But if we don't do that, we won't have the prerequisite of the foundation. Four rules and regulations helps us to be pious, good humans. And so we're not just involved in just the ritual, but we want to do these things so that it helps to bring on the proper consciousness. If it doesn't bring on the proper consciousness, we see that there are so many people who have been chanting for years and years and years, and they are so offensive, and they're so harsh. Their heart can become hard by austerity, even by chanting, if we're chanting with offenses. The people who are doing deity service, and while they're doing deity service, their mind is in the disco. And so the quality of that service is not the same because of the consciousness. We are doing the activities so that we will be more and more geared to developing the proper consciousness, so we're protecting ourselves by these activities. But we must go deeper into the essence so we become experiencers of such. If I tell you I'm going to give you $25,000, and I told you that 6 months ago or 6 years ago, and I haven't given you anything yet, will you have much faith in me in terms of offering you finance? No, because I haven't delivered. But if I promised you $25,000, 6 months ago, I've already given you $23,000, don't you have faith that I most likely will give you the $2,000 also? That faith is to produce certain results. When the faith is properly reposed, then there is also certain protection, realizations, higher tastes, etc. And so some of the reasons we are having a crisis in faith is because we're having difficulty in so many people not experiencing higher tastes, along with having so much of a rocky past and a difficult present. How can such people be so animatedly faithful when, in most cases, they've had experiences that have not delivered? When they've had so many associations that have not delivered, and so many times they've shut down themselves where they're not being able to deliver. Because then accepting mediocrity, accepting failure, accepting even sometimes people are thinking, well, maybe these four rules and regulations is something only Brahmins can do. Or maybe these four rules and regulations is not really so practical. Because after all, just see how many people have difficulties with them. Maybe we need to change so many things about the society, total overhaul, because it's not working. Or maybe we need to see how to work in the society with what is given in a deep enough way so we get the kind of results that can happen or that are available. Sometimes we, you know, I'm a very radical liberal person. I have no difficulty with change. Because sometimes we must change in order to remain chaste. Sometimes we must change secondary things so that we keep the primary. But sometimes people want to change because they've actually have lost faith in what is authentically there. So instead of going deeper, they want to now create a situation that accommodates mediocrity or accommodates the rationalism, rational things that are not necessarily transcendental. We're not just trying to be ordinary, nor do we want to deny being relevant. But we want mercy that comes from doing the right thing in the right way, and then we get all kind of facilitation. So it means a certain level of faith produces a certain kind of response, certain kind of realization, certain kind of protection. And tomorrow we'll look at some cases because we can see so many examples in the Shastra, so many things is given to us that shows how when we do surrender, Krishna carries through as he tells us how he rewards us as we surrender. He is either bluffing and we should give up this whole process because Krishna is a big bluffer and he doesn't deliver, or we should take it more serious and see how to do that so that we can get what Krishna is trying to give to us even more than we're ready to have it. It means amazing craziness that someone's trying to give us something, which is, you know, nature that we all experience in material energy, is a kind of a madness. Is that someone's trying to give us something that's good for us, and we're finding so many ways to try to get around it and to try to find an alternative, and we go on suffering, you know, in different ways, sometimes very gross, sometimes we're suffering peacefully, but suffering is there, and we're missing the chance to have real sense of transformation. So we're going to have maintained and have increasing difficulties in our society unless we have more people who are developing genuine higher tastes. Because when we have genuine higher tastes, it does have its ability to spill over. And as it spills over, it has its way of demanding more from us as we associate in such with such persons and in such environments. And as we keep waiting and conceptualizing for what can happen, it's like also waiting for the $25,000 and you haven't gotten $2,000 or $5,000, then of course at some point you think, hold it, this ain't working. And of course when we are not developing some higher taste, then Maya says, I'm your old friend. Don't you know what we used to do? Don't you remember the enjoyment that was from this or that activity? And where there is void, we will do different things to fill up that void, and we'll find ourselves getting drawn back to certain past things that we had often thought we had put away. We are looking for the ruchi. We are natural pleasure seekers. And if that pleasure isn't coming, then we will inevitably try to find some things to help us to feel greater sense of some kind of stimulation and happiness, we can turn to unhealthy ways. But now so much of our greater trust and love in Guru and Krishna stems from our trust in each other. So much of our being able to honor Shastra and Guru is so much based on what is going on in the interactions of sadhus. So we want to look today closer at just basic, some basic, simple formulas that help to build up greater trust amongst devotees. And then we'll try to look more directly in the spiritual consideration in terms of Guru and Krishna. Because without very, very intense faith, nobody is going to break through three modes of material nature. If my faith is not sufficiently strong, there's no question of me being able to rise above the three modes of material nature. If the faith is quite weak, I'm going to get really stuck in mode of ignorance and little passion and have a lot of trouble even reaching the platform of goodness. Prabhupada says goodness is a natural, in Bhagavad Gita, he says goodness is a natural launching pad. So it's also very difficult to really genuinely embrace transcendence when one is so stuck in ignorance or passion. And we see that the basic, so many basic schemes of goodness is honoring Dharma. If we analyze our fall downs, collectively, individually, deviations, whatever discrepancies, that these things all have to do with a discarding Dharma. When we honor Dharma, truthfulness, cleanliness, righteousness, we honor Dharma, then we have a wonderful platform for being able to radiate and go off into the Sanatana Dharma. When we minimize Dharma, then it's like trying to go to the university and bypassing even high school. And you're trying to go from like primary school to the university. Almost impossible. That's why Prabhupada said on a walk in Hawaii that to do such is like a joke. To try to minimize the mode of goodness for transcendence. So, we know the dangers of Vaishnava Aparad, and we can also see that so many difficulties ultimately can be traced back to Vaishnava Aparad. That then it has its way to weaken our entire, you know, spiritual immune system. And where there is healthy, proper Vaishnava associations, then we find that somehow there's much more protection and more healthy watering of the devotional creeper. What we want to do on the board, is the board, is it okay now? Can we trust it?
No. We can't trust it.
We will soon see. From experiences, we will have some level of trust or distrust. Okay, I just hope that I can trust that it won't fall on me. If it falls, it falls that way. I will see from the experience if my trust is reposed in the right scheme. Let us share amongst ourselves. Here we have a hypothetical situation. We have two devotees who are in the same institution, who are in the same project, who have the same spiritual master, who, let's say, even working in the same department, but they don't trust each other. Okay? These devotees working the same project, very similar goals, even have same, you know, temple authority, same guru, but they don't trust each other. So now, let me hear from you. We're going to put a little list on the board. What are some of the likelihoods of negativity that can come from such association and encounter? What are some negative things that we can think about that will engender or be produced by two people who are working together? They've been given blessings, instructions by temple president, by guru, serving the same mission, even the same temple, even the same guru. And these devotees associating on a regular basis, but they do not trust each other. We can say the trust may be even so intense that they don't even like each other. But definitely they don't trust each other. Now, what are some of the negative things that can come from this. Who's going to write for me? Who's a good scribe? Okay. Be a good speller. Okay, so just start from one. Write it a little small, but so that everybody can see it. This is a case of devotees not trusting. Just put do not trust. Just put it at the top. Do not trust and underline it. Okay.
Run that first. Uh-huh.
I would think the person you would expect would be some lack of respect.
Okay, first. Put one, disrespect.
Mm-hmm. Let me just ask a question about this whole situation. Are we saying that they don't trust each other because there's some untrustable element in each other, or there is an untrustable element in each other, they just don't trust each other, or we don't care about that, whether there is actually a basis or not?
Yeah, we don't care whether it's perceived or real, whether it's from things that have happened in the past or from other things that happened to them that's caused them not to trust this person. But the point is that they're working together and they seriously, genuinely do not trust each other.
Limited communication.
Okay. Limited communication.
Mm-hmm. Unhealthy competition.
Okay. Three. Unhealthy competition.
Uh-huh. Sabotage the mission.
Sabotage. Sabotage the mission.
Mm-hmm.
No cooperation. Okay. No cooperation. Lack of cooperation. Mm-hmm.
Low productivity.
There's a working man back there. Anyone else?
Hesitancy to make available resources or whatever.
Okay. Fear of making resources available. And we're not just theorizing, although this is a hypothetical situation, but these are day-to-day things that happen in our institution, anybody else's institution. Day-to-day things that can happen on the workforce, day-to-day things that happen in the family, day-to-day things that happen in our effort of trying to serve our particular projects. Maybe one or two more? Selfishness?
Enviousness?
Okay. You can lose faith. We have disturbance in the authority.
Mm-hmm. Desire to control.
Okay. Desire to control. How many do you have so far?
11.
Okay. Let's take one more. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's put Mr. Paranoia. Okay, just look at our list up there, huh? Okay. Now look at this list. Let me have your opinion. So I could pretend to be like a teacher for a minute. So, if you look at, everyone can see this list? I mean, it's amazing grouping of some really negative things that causes that person to suffer. In some ways, it causes the person that they're working with to have some complexities in what they're trying to do. It brings disrespect, which means somebody's creeper is being affected. Maybe both of them are disrespecting each other. Somebody is hurting themselves because this can obviously accelerate into Vaishnava Aparad if it hasn't already. Limited communication, that this is going to have a big effect in slowing some things down, making extra work, producing problems. Now this is going on every day in everybody's institution, and those institutions that are learning how to grow, and those institutions in the area of business and other area in other fields that are not able to work on these, they will die. Because competition in areas is so intense now that if you can't create a greater trust culture, you won't be able to have greater sense of productivity, won't be able to have greater sense of creativity, won't be able to keep focus on the vision. Limited communications, opportunity is there. Somebody has some knowledge that can help the other person. Even though they're working for the same guru, same temple, same project, they do not share or reveal that information because they don't trust that person. They don't feel the person is right, is worthy of giving that. They feel if they give the information, the person may even use it against them. What is this one? Unhealthy, same, limited community, oh, it's the same thing. Sabotage the mission. All of this will come to sabotaging. Because as they are having apparats or making offenses, they're bringing that into the community. That's going to affect their own individual life. It's going to affect their family. It's going to affect the institution. They're going to bring less of themselves into whatever they're doing. Because of making the offenses, they're going to deny themselves from mercy in some areas. They're going to deny themselves to be able to experience greater wealth of blessings and realizations. No cooperation. What is this one? Low productivity. How hard it is for people to offer their best, to receive someone else's best, when they don't trust each other. When you don't trust someone, then you have this kind of paranoia that even when they're even giving you the best of what they can, even when they are sometimes arranging something that's best for you, one will be not ready to fully honor it and accept it. Because there will be the speculation and fear. And sometimes it will take so much effort and so much time processing because there will usually be a feeling of guilt into proving innocent when you don't trust someone. And then even when they are trustworthy, so much time and energy has been lost, sometimes so much offenses or so many other things, because it takes a while to try to build up the necessary information where you feel you can almost trust the person. Fear of making, what is this one? Resources. Fear of making resources available. Because the trust is very intense, lack of trust. You won't even begin to see the person as an enemy. And you don't facilitate your enemy because you feel your enemy, whatever they have, they're going to use it against you. Or they're going to hurt you. If they're getting stronger, that they're going to bother you. When you don't trust someone, then it means in one sense, the more whatever wonderful thing happens to them, the more it can be a disturbance to you because you can feel that you're more in jeopardy or you're more vulnerable. Because that person becomes even more powerful who's not so much in your best interest. When you don't trust somebody, you're kind of saying in one sense that that person really is not for your best interest. And it may be true. But it may be also just perceived or speculation. Selfishness. Naturally, when you don't trust, you have to be more self-centered. Because after all, if they're not going to take care of you, who's going to do it? If they're not going to carry out their promise, who's going to do it? So you give much more into a hamamiti of you as the body, as the entity, as the person, which in one sense is totally inimical to our platform of bhakti. We're supposed to be selfless and dasosmi, dasono, dasono, das. We're supposed to be the servant of the servants. Is it really easy to be the servant and the servant of somebody if you don't trust them? If you don't trust them, many can't. The case you don't even feel they're worthy of you extending yourself. And you're afraid if you do extend yourself, because you don't trust them, they're going to take advantage of it. Enviousness can happen when someone has abused your trust and you feel they've exploited and they've benefited in some way. loss of faith. You can even lose faith in whoever arranged for you to associate with that person who's giving you such a headache, such a problem, with such a disturbance in your life. And so that anxiety is going to go somewhere, and sometimes it'll go on the authority because of you not trusting the person, which can be real or perceived, you know, reasons. Desire to control. When you're in a situation that's dangerous and precarious, then you want to protect yourself. And so you extend to control so you can try to guarantee what the outcome is going to be. And of course, all of this is paranoia. This is sabotaging. In other words, the list we have here is a list of things that will hurt the person, will in some ways hurt the one who you don't trust, especially if they're actually genuine. It will cause a lack of productivity in whatever one is trying to do. Sometimes it will literally sabotage the effort. Imagine sometimes two devotees working together and they have such enviousness or distrust toward each other. Then sometimes they'll even just do something to frame the other person. The other person will look bad, or the other person will have to be removed because that person is so much a disturbance for them. And so they're feeling, it's just like if you feel somebody's going to attack you, then sometimes you attack them first. You feel somebody is against you, you don't know when they're going to come forth and do something that's going to bother you, so you try to remove yourself or remove them. And so all of this goes on when there's a lack of trust, consciously and unconsciously. But then again, how can we trust if someone hasn't delivered or someone has proven that they are not trustworthy? And we'll talk about that in a minute. Some of the things that helps to destroy trust and things that helps to build up trust that are part of Vaishnava association and part of community development. Now, I want you to think for a minute of the time that someone was not trustworthy in the way that they interacted with you. Let's erase it. Is there something to erase the board on? When you think of how you felt, or even perhaps even how you still feel, it's still going on. But we're looking at emotions now. What are the emotions that you feel when someone abuses your trust? You have gone you have reposed your trust, faith in someone, and you know they have abused it. They didn't honor it. They lied. They cheated. They didn't fulfill their particular responsibility. They went against what they promised that they would do. They didn't follow through. They weren't there for you as they posited that they would be. Something happened that distinctly was a breach of your trust, your faith in that particular person. What are, and you can use this, what are some of the emotions that we, you know, that we experience, that we feel when, you know, when such a thing happens?
Disgust.
Okay, you want to put up there? Number one, disgust.
Mm-hmm. Angry.
Anger. Go out and buy a gun. Tell them, okay, it's the last time you're going to do something like this, huh?
The decision that would never engage in this kind of agreement or relationship with the person again.
Okay. We lose faith in agreements with this person.
Wounded.
Feel wounded.
Uh-huh.
Are you able to write the fast? Okay. Feel wounded? Feel used? Mother? Yes. We start judging others.
Mm-hmm. stupid we've actually trusted that person.
Okay. We feel foolish.
Feel is spelled F-E-E-L. Okay.
F-E-E-L. F-E-E-L. Feel.
Number four. That second L, the first L should be an E.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Abandonment.
Abandonment.
Uh-huh.
Abandonment. Okay.
Violent.
Any others? Yes.
My response is usually just typical.
What do you? can you translate that?
No, it's just like, what do you
cynical.
It's like cynical.
Another good reason not to change your opinion.
Yes,
about
just put cynical.
Okay.
Just put cynical. So yeah, just reinforces what I always believed. Anyone else? Uh-huh. Mother, you any other one? Yes.
Revenge.
Revenge. Got a real shot to you there. I'll just put sadness. Okay. How are we doing for space? Okay, we got room for one more. Yes.
Frustration.
Okay. Frustration. So now, look at our list here. Let me see a pen again. In case I want to mark something. Disgust. I mean, yeah, all of these are pretty heavy, you know, negative emotions, you know. Which now is absorbed in our mental culture, which is going to affect some things we say, some ways of how we behave to that person as well as to others. It's going to have an influence on now what we are bringing or adding or distracting to the community. You know, a person who's very angry, they're carrying anger about something, does it just stop? Normally, only with that one thing? Not really. Somebody, you know, you're really angry that, you know, you lost some money. The devotee say, Prabhu, Haribo, how you doing? What do you mean, how I'm doing? He says, it's a wonderful day today. What's good about this day? You're always being so sentimental and emotional. Why are you always so happy? What is there to be happy about? So something has made them angry. And it doesn't just stop only with that person. But it becomes a part of what they're carrying. And it becomes manifested in the environment. You lose faith. Feel wounded. Feel used. Start judging others. When something bad has happened to you, then you're also sometimes anticipating it may happen again with the same person, or others may also do such. Begin to now see through a certain pair of glasses, certain view that gets clouded based on that. You feel foolish, and in some cases people may internalize to such an extent that they've accepted that they are a fool, and now they do what? By accepting, I'm a fool, I'm not worthy, I'm available to be cheated, then you draw more cheaters. You draw more the same. Abandonment. One feels abandonment because of they've tried to connect, tried to open themselves up. They were vulnerable. And now they feel a sense of abandonment. Now, here's the man who's feeling abandonment because he trusted his father. His father wasn't there for him. He was an alcoholic. And so when he needed that support, it wasn't there. Now he's married, and what happens? Every little thing his wife does. Another man. Who are you talking to on the phone? Why are you walking so close to this person? He's so much fearful that she's cheating because he's developed a consciousness of lack of trust. And therefore, he is constantly thinking, that she is also going to abandon him, that she's not really there for him. And what happens? Here, the children get affected by it, divorce, the relationship is rocky, the community has to experience some things because of that rocky type of relationship. It doesn't just stay in one place.